Access number 11938, rail 11.
Mr. G. Iston, rail 11. Was discipline pretty severe in Bromsgrove Hospital, Mr. Iston?
No, I think soldiers in general have their own discipline, and I can't say it was any discipline at all. We're more regarded as heroes than anything they could do for us, they would do. Certainly we were taking advantage of the Dunkirk myth, as has been reported recently. We were regarded more as heroes than we were as anything else. And the hospital, as I've said, was part of a mental hospital. And the doctors and the nurses, majority of nurses were VAD, Red Cross VAD nurses. In fact, one I got quite attracted to, and found out she was one of the Miss Cadburys, who were quite close to Bourneville, is quite close to Bromsgrove. And she was one of the Miss Cadburys when I found out, so we dropped that off a bit smartly after that. I got quite active once I got the chaplain out of my leg. I was helping the doctors and the nurses quite a lot. And on one occasion, they came for me specially because they were having trouble with a Belgian soldier. Poor lad couldn't speak any English and didn't understand what we were trying to do. And he is one of the, not the French Belgians, but the Flemish Belgians. And I couldn't talk to him in French, not even my pidgin French, I couldn't talk to him. But he had shrapnel, I think, in the arm. And they wanted to give him gas. And he thought they were trying to murder him. Gas isn't a very pleasant thing in those days. It was a mask that covered your face. And I suppose he felt that we were trying to smother him rather than do anything with him. And we had a terrific time before we got him put under and the shrapnel removed. And then the following day I went in to see him and he was all smiles, he was happy as could be. Still couldn't talk to us, but he was quite happy that he'd woken up again. This was another state of fear. We were trying to help him, but he had the fear. Whether he thought he was a prisoner in Germany, not his bad to tell, but I don't know, I haven't seen fear really like that before. I've seen people go berserk many a time, but not really through fear the way that this lad had. He was berserk, but it was just through fear. He was frightened. He didn't know what we were going to do to him. And the mask is a frightening thing, I must admit. It's not a very pleasant thing at any time. And the great thing there, of course, was we finally got in touch with our people. In fact, the War Office sent a telegram to my parents that said I was in Bromsgrove. And they were on the phone quite sharply through to the hospital. I didn't actually speak to them, but one of the nurses said that my parents had been on, and they told them how I was, and there was a slight wound in the leg. And I was worried about Major Jeffries, and I wrote home and told them how things were going and asked if there was any news of him. And I received a telegram from Mrs. Jeffries saying he was safe, which really lifted me altogether. I was really pleased about this. And as I said, there's one or two very smart nurses around. They took us to, when I was getting quite well and could walk reasonably well, they took us to Longbridge, to the Austin plant. And we went through the Austin plant. And then they took us to one of the big hotels. And we had tea in one of the big hotels, then back to the hospital. It was a really great trip.
Did you have much contact with the people outside the hospital?
Not a lot, except on this trip. I think that was, I only did the one trip, I think, from there. And that's about the only time that I really... Oh, I did. I went down the village of Bromsgrove twice. We weren't in blues, I don't think. I think we're still in uniform with a big gash in the leg. And I went down twice and they were very friendly. Everybody was over the moon that we were back safely, I think.
There wasn't any mood of defeatism that you could
none at all.
See.
None at all. No. I think that the Dunkirk thing had been regarded as a victory. We can't accept it was a victory, but there's no doubt that the people of Britain, in Britain, regard it as a victory that so many people had got back home again and were ready to start all over again. I won't say they were particularly happy about it, but they were pleased. There's no doubt that they were pleased that we'd got back. And they were very, very, very good to us. The unfortunate thing, and I was getting on quite well with the doctors and the nurses, and they were kind of anxious to keep me there. But there's a message came through that if we went back to the unit within 6 weeks, we would be put in the army pool, which meant that we'd go anywhere the army wanted to send us. So with that arriving, I went straight back to the depot at Bransworth.
Any idea what date this was?
I haven't. No. I could probably, if I only thought, I could probably have found out. But anyway, it's within 6 weeks of sort of the 1st of June, so we're talking about mid-July. Somewhere mid-July, I would think. But I went back to Bransworth. And then I got a few days' leave to go home. And I was in the castle at Bransworth. The depot was actually in a camp behind the castle in Bransworth, on Bransworth Colliery. But I was actually in the depot, and there's quite a lot of us that had sort of drifted back from hospitals around the country, and we'd assembled in Bransworth Castle, but not actually in the depot, because the depot was really strict. Obviously, where you're training recruits, it's there's no inch given. It's army law from getting up in the morning till going to bed at night. There's no let up at all, not for the first 10 weeks anyway of training. I did go there later on, actually, and I didn't think much about it at all. But this time I was in the castle, and we're back to army work as it was before we went to France. I think I should say here that the army life in France was very much different to the army life in England. In England, it was still based on, I would say, the Indian Army style, where they had mess dinners and so forth. In France, there wasn't so many mess dinners at all. And later on, when we got back to Litoncini, they started with the mess dinners again, which
we'll
come back to the officer's mess and the sergeant's mess. And they tried to get back to, a gentry style of life. Not a gentle, but a gentry, if you know what I mean, with the dressing up and saluting everywhere, whereas in France we're discouraged from saluting in certain places, not all the time. I mean, if you met in the street, you saluted, but if you were on an exercise, we're discouraged from saluting. And it was much more friendly in France. The depot was starting to get back again to how army life should be, let's be fair. I mean, how army life is.
When you were in the castle, what was the attitude of those who hadn't been abroad? Was there any kind of veteran status?
Yes. Although most of us in the castle had been abroad. Some had been to China and come back, and some were from India and come back. Second Battalion, of course, was in France, and a lot of those had come back. And most of the people in the castle had been abroad, as opposed to the depot, which is across the road, where the training was going on, which was entirely different. So after leave, I got back to the castle, and I was re-clothed and re-equipped. And then I learned that the Battle of Arras at the crossroads, the British tanks had returned, and there'd been a tank battle over the heads of the lads in the sunken road at the crossroads. And a lot of the lads had got away while the battle was going on, and a lot more was saved than I expected. because when I went to see Colonel Miller, it did look really desperate, as though everybody was going to be shot up. But whether Colonel Miller got the tanks back or not, I don't know. I went to ask him to get the tanks back. Whether he did get them or not, I don't know. But anyway, the tanks came back, and they were shooting over the... I mean, a right old battle, the British tanks and the German tanks over the heads of the lads in the Something Road, which allowed a lot of the lads to get away from the Something Road.
Did you meet many of the chaps who
I didn't.
At this stage?
No, not at the depot. Not 6th Battalion people. There must have been a few, but I don't remember a lot of the 6th Battalion lads. I didn't make any friends there, I can recall. I know I went for a walk through Croke and Willington because we used to go to Croke dancing. That was one of the Andersons, the Anderson Enterprises. They had a lot of dance halls through the county, and they had a series of very good bands. I remember walking through Croke and going in the dance hall, and I went to Willington because Tommy Russ, my pal, he had a... apart from that, I don't really remember a lot. I know we were re-equipped with everything, and no doubt we would do some drill of some sort to keep us in shape. But I had the leave from there, and I got back, and I think within about a week, I was... No, from the castle, I was sent to the drill hall at Gilesgate. And there I had a wonderful job. Sort of a regimental police in Durham City. And there was one or two threatened air raids. We were about to see the people were down in the shelters, and I don't think air raids ever did anything, but there was a few sirens going. We had to see the people in the shelters. And I must have been in the drill, I suppose, about a fortnight doing this sort of regimental police kind of thing. That was a winner. We were all over the place.
Well, what were the duties of a regimental policeman?
Just patrolling the town, and if you saw any soldiers sort of slouching or anything like that, was just to shake them up, and we're there to assist the wardens, air raid wardens, the regular police, if they had any problems. Having said I was in the drill hall at Gilesgate, I was there for two nights, and I was put in Old Elbert Station in Durham. And we stayed there for about, I suppose, 10 days, something like that, doing this same thing. Well, that was a good job. I liked that. And then we recalled again to Gilesgate and assembled as a draft, and we're sent to the 2nd Battalion at Weymouth, or in the Weymouth district. Now, there, as I've just said, they were getting back to the old army regimental style of working. For all, we were back in action, just as though we were in action in France, in fact, more so, because we were the front line. But the army seemed to think that it wanted to get back to its old style of working, and I wasn't very happy at Weymouth at all. Because I knew I should have been with the 6th Battalion, but they didn't. They hadn't been told I was to go with the 6th Battalion. And I remember having a walk around Portland Bill, which was a great thrill, because the Navy, there's a big Navy depot in Portland. And I had a good look around the ships, and it's a good walk around Portland Bill. I can't just remember where I went to. I went out to one company. I can't remember where, but there was the... like a way out in front of the sea, just like a beach at, going across the Orley Island. I think it got covered, some tides of the year covered it, but it was there pretty well, and you could walk along this thing. It would be 50-100 yards out from the coast, and you could walk along it right down to Portland Bill, but I can't just remember where I was stationed with the 8th Battalion. Anyway, one day the QM from the 6th Battalion came up. I think it was Jack Robson, I'm not sure, but I think it was Robson. Rolled up in a... I don't think it was a Land Rover. Yeah, could it? No. I don't know. Anyway, he rolled up, and I was told to pack my bags and throw them in the back of the... whatever it was, and I was taken back to the 6th Battalion.
So how long had you been at Weymouth?
I would think maybe about a fortnight. So now we're talking about August, you see, really, by the time I get to Lytton Cheney. And
how did you find the battalion when you got to Lytton Cheney?
Well, I was a bit sick because I'd heard that Major Jeffries was colonel, and when I knew I was going back, I thought, oh, well, the colonel has a driver and a batman. So if I can get the driver's job, I'm set. However, by the time I got there, Colonel Jeffries was back to second command, and Major Battescombe from the 8th Battalion had come down. He must have been the senior major. I think I did say earlier on that I think Major Jeffries would only be a captain, a full captain. In fact, he could have been a full lieutenant who came to the 6th Battalion, promoted captain, temporary captain. And, of course, he was made major just before the war started, and a colonel in the field. So his rank was probably still a full lieutenant. So he was sort of well down the list. And we've got to remember that after Dunkirk, there wasn't the divisional organisations because there were so few, the army was so small, there was no room for divisions. Everybody was more or less in the field. I think the 50th Div still acted as a division, and certainly there was a brigade. But I think Jack Churchill had gone. I think Brigadier Churchill had gone at that stage. And I can't recall who was the brigadier. But the fact was that with the divisions going, the army had been demoted more or less right the way through, practically, to their proper ranks. And I think Major Jeffs would only be a full lieutenant at that stage. So when I did get back, Major Jeffries was second in command again, and I resumed just as I was. It was billeted in a house, I think, on the Little Breedy or the Long Breedy Road, a modern house, I think probably a farmhouse, with two youngish women in the late 20s, early 30s, I would think. And I believe that their husbands were away at war. And it was very, very nice there. I was billeted in a loft, I would think. We went up some stairs outside and then in this place. I think it was a hay loft or something like that. Not near the farm, but more in the village. Lytton Cheney, to try and place it, if we take the A35 running from Dorchester to Exeter, runs practically due west, and Dorchester's on the coast, Exeter's on the coast, but in the meantime you've got Weymouth, which is like a nose jutting out to sea. So at that point it's probably about 10 miles from Weymouth, this A35. Taking the A35 is running due west. But in most places, the A35 is about 10 miles from the coast. Starting from the coast, finishing at the coast, and then going about 10 miles inland. But it's actually the land that goes out rather than the road going in. So if we take that as a point, Lytton Cheney was about 10 miles from Dorchester, 7 miles from Bridport, and a mile south of the A35, 4 miles from the actual course as the crow flies. It was a picturesque village, straggly sort of a village. I remember off one of the road, the Long Brady Road, was sunken down with high hedges on either side, and terrace row of cottages, single story cottages, really beautiful. It's a typical West Country row of cottages.
What was the battalion's task in that area?
Well, by the time I got there, the battalion had built a command post just south of Pumpnall, on a road which again ran parallel east and west, or west and east. I went west, parallel to the A35, but that was about 2-3 miles south, and the command post was more or less on this road, and the defensive line was from West Bay, almost in Bridport, to the Swanry, which is east of name's gone.
Abbotsbury,
that's right. About a mile, and about 600 yards east of Abbotsbury, and then the 8th Battalion took over there and they went round the Weymouth corner. I remember on the West Bay side, a big Navy gun, I think it was a 5.7, concreted in. We often talked about it, but I never actually saw it fire. Whether it did have a fire or not, I don't know, but I don't remember seeing it fire. And all along the Dorset coast, you've got this double beach I mentioned. That goes all the way along. But from Bridport to the Swanage, to the Swanry, it is tidal. It's covered by tide, but it's still there. You would have to have a high tide before you could get over it with any sort of a landing craft, I would have thought. On the other hand, they could have beached on that and wandered ashore from there. And of course, at this time, we didn't know that Dorset was one of the places where they did intend coming ashore. Those three places, one on the southeast corner, one in Hampshire, and this one in Dorset. I couldn't never get a thought, actually, that we're trying to get in there. For all I knew, we were defending that spot. But it's only since the war that I've known that this was one of the spots they intended coming in.
What was the morale of the battalion like when you reached it?
It seemed pretty well back to normal, the way it was. Some had been upset because one person, Major Purry, when they met at Rugeley, where they assembled at Rugeley, he told them that they had nothing to be proud of, they'd run away. And that had upset quite a lot. But whether he was still there when I arrived or not, I can't imagine. I don't remember seeing this gentleman anymore after after Arras.
There's no...
And he wasn't a very great pal of mine because he should have been on the road where I took the prisoners. But he wasn't. He hadn't got that far. He was lagging back a bit and he should have actually cleared the bit of road where I previously mentioned taking the prisoners. If he'd been up in line with C Company, he would have taken the prisoners and I wouldn't have been troubled with him at all. So it wasn't in my great books to start with. And now when I got back and I heard this, that sort of... I think they'd been very sickened by this. Because they'd had a rough time and there was no need to go at them in that sort of form.
He didn't explain the reasons why he came to this opinion, did he?
No, not that I'm aware of. As I said, I never met the gentleman. But it upset me to think that he was saying that we'd run away. I suppose, in a sense, if you look at it in one way, we had run away, but discretion's a better part of valour in a lot of places, isn't it? As I've said many a time, bravery is a knowledge or a lack of knowledge. It's not in between. You either know what you're doing or you don't know what you're doing. And I think that we didn't know what we were doing, really, did we?
Was there any other comments that you heard about the Arras battle, which was prevalent at the time?
No, it seemed as though it had been discussed and dropped. You must remember that soldiers don't like to talk about depressing things. It's not their nature to talk about anything which is depressing, unless you can laugh about it. If you can have a laugh about it, then it's all right to talk about it. But if you can't laugh, and there wasn't much to laugh about, quite honestly about it, no, it wasn't talked about very much at all. In fact, I learned more about the Battle of Arras in Durham than I did in when I got back to the battalion.
What had you learned about in Durham?
Well, as I said, I learned that the tanks had come back and There'd been the shootout over the top of the infantry, and the infantry had a few had got away under cover of the tank battle that was going on over their heads. How it actually finished, I don't know. How the tanks fared, it's bad to tell. I don't really know what happened at the finish of it. But I did overhear about the tanks coming in. And
in spite of Major Perry's opinion, was there any mood that they felt that they could meet and beat the Germans?
Oh, I think we were back on terms again. We knew we'd beaten the Germans on a little bit of a thing. We knew we'd had that success. And, I mean, it was a success for all. We had to back off in the finish. But if the French had come to join us and the artillery had come down and stood beside us when we were having the tank attack, it could have been a different thing altogether. So we knew that the Germans were beatable. We had beaten them. And as I described when I took the prisoners, they were just didn't know what had hit them. They were numb. I mean, you don't turn your back on somebody who's got a rifle in his hand normally. But that's what happened, and they didn't take advantage of it at all. So, I mean, we knew that the Germans were beatable. The only thing was getting to them in force, and with tanks and armour and guns.
What was the situation regarding equipment?
Well, I'd been re-equipped in Durham, and I had a rifle again. And we got gaiters and the proper battle dress. Now, as far as the... We had some carriers by the time I got back to Nittingini. How many I can't just recall, but there was quite a few. I think it was probably 10. There could have been more. I can't remember, but certainly there was carriers there. I'll tell you a tale I want to know about the carriers. I mentioned about the Remy some tapes ago, taking over, and that had upset me. And one of my mates, it was now a sergeant. So I was going down to meet them one day in the carriers while I was still working with Major Jeffries. And the sergeant's in the bottom of the carrier, peroxiding his head. He was an Irishman, probably got jet black hair. He was Irish, came from Cologne. And jet black hair, which was bleached white, absolutely white, and he was in the bottom of the carrier bleaching it. But we came to an agreement, and I never told anybody, but I mean, now I don't know whether he's still alive or not, so now I believe the last I heard he was in Canada anyway. Paddy was in the bottom of the carrier bleaching his hair with peroxide, so I know those carriers there.
Why was he doing this?
To make his hair blonde, white. He was black, you see. I take it he would be black, or he could have been a red Irishman. I don't really know, but he always had this white, thick white hair. And we always laughed about it as well. It's, you know, there was a joke going around that was peroxide. It's only where they'd catch him one day. But I never told anybody. It still carried on. And so I know those carriers there. Apart from that, transport wasn't very bright. Major Jeffries was now at a... instead of the Morris PU, the Morris Public Utility, Personnel Utility, he now had a Hillman Minx with a canvas back, like a Hillman Minx pickle, which suited me great because now we'd got a car with a heater. I mean, the Morris heaters were unheard of, and this one had a heater in, which was really great, and it was much easier to drive. The Morris had a terrible gearbox, and you were lucky if you got two clean changes in a day. But now we had the Hillman. A lovely little job, because the firm I'd served my time with, they were Hillman agents. So I knew a little bit about the Hillman Minx. It had just come nicely on the market, about 1938. And a lovely little job it was. So he now had the Hillman Minx. We had various kinds of trucks. A real mix-up of vehicles. One I used to cart the band around with was a beauty. It was a Morris full-fronted thing where the steering wheel was right down over in front of the wheels, and the engine sat at the side of you, which was again nice and warm. That was nice to drive. And I used to take the band around, the dance band around in that. What a real mixture! And we got some Austins. Austins had always been ambulances. And we got two or three Austins down. They were quite good trucks. And with me just having been to Longbridge, I was quite thrilled about that. For all I never saw the trucks being built, they were all cars that I saw being built at Longbridge.
Were they all army trucks or were they civilian
trucks? No, the bread van, the Morris I'm talking about, the fronted one, that was a bread van. There were all sorts. Everything you could think of, laundries, two or three market gardeners' trucks with lattice sides, you know, that probably went around the shops selling their goods off. A complete mixture. We had one or two army trucks, but not a lot. The fitters, they had an army truck, a three-tonner. But there was a real mixture of trucks. And I think that really the only thing that would say that was complete was probably the carriers. We even got as far as to collecting push bikes. This was after Major Jeffries had gone. I'm getting a little bit ahead of things here. I was a bit upset going back to Lytton Cheney because, as I said, they were trying to get back to an old style of army style with the dress dinners and all the rest of it. And there was a great pressure to get me to go into the officers' mess.